American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And good day, this is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Thursday, January 6th, 2005. And boy, oh boy, is there ever a lot of people listening to me. Response to the program has been just overwhelming. I've been getting, like, turned on my email the other day, and I was like, bam! You know, server reports that you have taken over the world. So that's very, very cool. Thank you so much, everyone who's responded. And, of course, no one responds faster than when I screw up. And apparently, yes, yes, it's true. You can, in fact, get lighter watches. So saith Stone Rhino, Jijin Machina, Gothic Serpent Inks, and Mega Program... Mega Progman. Sorry, I screwed that right up again. You know, Jijin Machina sent me this wonderful thing about how to pronounce their name. So if you've got like one of these elite hacksaw names, you know, you want to make sure that you can tell, you know, an old floating Luddite like me how to pronounce, you know, the high-speed, low-drag, you know, otaku names you guys got going on. So if you got a funky name, make sure you include a pronunciation. So I'm happy about that, but one pronunciation I didn't have to worry about was poor boy. For sort yourself out, I got a question. It wasn't really addressed as such, but I'm going to do it for the sort yourself out section of the show. Sort yourself out is where I hand out advice, which is going to be the first part of the show. So I got an email from him that reads as follows. Hi, Sean. It's poor boy from the theater. I just wanted to say that I love your new show. It's great and very informative. Just had a suggestion. Maybe you could at some point in a future show mention some books that you would recommend. I have a lot of time on my hands now, and what better way to spend it than reading? Okay, anyway, Sean and Sim, keep doing what you are doing. You guys rock. Now, that's kind of a tall order for me to recommend books, because as everyone knows, I've got I don't know if you do know this, but my library is actually pretty thick. I'd recommend that if you don't read a lot, you know, and you're just kind of new to this whole game and you're not too sure how much you should be reading and you want to get right into, you know, tackle some Noam Chomsky and start, you know, filling your head up with stuff. Okay, that's cool. And I really advise that. I think that's a great idea. But sometimes you can jump in with both feet and you might get yourself into some reading that you're not really ready for and you'll get discouraged. Not that, you know, you couldn't handle it, but it's, you know, Noam Chomsky's a little dry. You know, if you have problems sleeping, listen to one of his lectures and bang, you're out right now. So if depending on where you're at reading wise, I think that you could start at some easier stuff and then work your way up. I would recommend for anyone, I think anyone and everyone should read Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. This is a book I've gone on about before. Another one that's a good introductory, I shouldn't say it's a good introductory book. It's a great book anyway, by Naomi Klein, which was, I'm probably screwing up her name too. But anyway, No Logo, which is almost a Bible for some people. And if you're thinking you got the brain matter to really tackle it, I suggest you check out a book by a good Canadian kid called Understanding Media, and that's by Marshall McLuhan. And just about anything by Marshall McLuhan or Noam Chomsky would be good. Ice Razor was asking me about, what's that guy's name? Noam Chomsky. That's the dude you want to check out. We got a lot of news posted in, but of course, Noog posted a link for what the 51 categories, yesterday I was talking about what the 51 categories on the British ID card would be. Well, Noog found a link and posted it inside of one of the forums. And I'm just going to go over what the 51 categories are. Now, just to backtrack a little bit in case you didn't catch yesterday's show, I guess the Brits have this ID scheme where they want to put 51 different categories on their ID cards, which is going to be mandatory by 2008. These are the same ID cards that you get, like, you know, a $5,000 fine if you don't sign up for it. Yeah, nothing like $5,000 to say, hey, why don't you get back in line? Personally, I'd probably rather be shot because I haven't got the $5,000 to spare, but you know, what the hell. Also, you have to pay a $2,000 fine if you happen to, you know, change some information like get married, fall in love, any of that kind of stuff, and you don't update the government. Well, you know. So let's go over these 51 different categories on the ID cards. You'd have, of course, your name. Other previous names or aliases. Date of birth. Okay, so far not so bad. Your address. Well, your license has that. Previous addresses in the United Kingdom. Whoa, previous addresses? Everywhere you've lived in the United Kingdom and elsewhere. Every country you lived in. Times of residency at different places. Whoa. Current residential status. Residential status is previously held. Whoa, meaning that if you were married or common law, is that what that means? Or if you were renting or owning, is that what that means? Information about numbers allocated in the applicant for identification purposes about the documents to which they relate. Okay, so that means all of your other numbers, your social insurance numbers, your probably your passport numbers, information about occasions on which recorded information in the register has been provided to any person. Now, this is on the card. So if people are looking you up, that information will be there. Information records in register on request. I'm not too sure what that means. It'll have, of course, now we're going to get to the regular stuff. It'll have a photograph, your fingerprints, other biometrics, which, you know, iris recognition, you know, DNA, that kind of thing. Your signature, your nationality, your entitlement to remain in the United Kingdom, why you're allowed to stay in the United Kingdom and grant to leave and enter and remain, you know, if you're allowed to come and go. Your national identity registration number, of course. The number of any ID card that has ever been issued. National insurance number, which is different, I guess, from your ID. I mean, we're up to 22 here. Number of relevant immigration. What else we got here? Let's just skip through this. United Kingdom passport. Passport behalf of authorities of another country. Number of any document that can be used instead of a passport. Identity card issuer. Driver's license number. Date of applicant registration. It goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. It's also got a password or other code that can be used in purpose particulars method of generating such a password or code. Like, essentially, they've got everything here. The bill contains no provision for Parliament to decide what information will be stored in or on the card. This will be left to the discretion of the Home Office. So, that means that even though they have a list of 51 things that they could put out and make available for everyone, they don't have to stick with it because it's up to the discretion of the Home Office. They want to make it 52 categories or 51 categories or 1,001 flavors. We really have no say because it's up to the discretion of the Home Office. Isn't that a fun idea? Another fun idea for all of you out there who have to buy your drugs. An interesting study is out from the University of California. Not to buy any drugs or prescription medication in the beginning of the month. Now, everyone's heard about the Friday cars, right? Never buy a car that's made on a Friday. This is an interesting idea. Beware not the Ides, but the start of March and April and May and every month. In the first few days of each month, fatalities, that's people dying due to medication errors, rise by as much as 25% above normal. This is according to research by the University of California San Diego sociologist David Phelps, published in the January issue of Pharmacotherapy, which I'm sure everyone's got I've got a subscription to that. Do you have Pharmacotherapy? Yeah, it's good stuff, man. They got some wicked chicks in there. The Journal of American College of Clinical Pharmacy, the study of first document, and the study is the first to document, these funny words, a beginning of the month spike in deaths attributed to mistakes in prescription drugs. Now, 25% more people die due to mistakes in the prescription drugs, and this isn't in the media. The primary suspect, Phillips says, is beginning of the month increase in pharmacy workloads and a consequent increase in their error rates. Government assistance payments to the old, the sick, and the poor are typically received at the beginning of each month. Because of this, there is beginning of the month spike in purchases and prescription medication. Phillips says pharmacy workloads go up. In line with both evidence and experience, error rates go up as well. Our data suggests the mortality spike occurs at least partly because of this phenomenon. So, you know, it could be argued by conspiracy nuts that it's great because who are we taking out here? Well, we're taking out the elderly, we're taking out the poor, and we're taking out the sick. You know, all the sick, lame, and lazy. We want to get rid of these people, you know? Who needs them anyway? They're not really good for the capitalist model. You know, they're not so great. They just, you know, take up resources and time and space and slow down traffic. And we just want to kill them off. So let's just, you know, I don't know, get a little sloppy with the meds. And, you know, somebody has a heart murmur and bang, out they go. Where is this in the news? Where is this in the news? It's nowhere in the news. That's why I'm reporting it. Now, something came down the pipe just recently in regards to searching computers. Now, whenever they want to do something and they want to take away your rights, what's the first thing they're going to do? Well, they're going to vilify it, right? And they're going to use vilification to justify their actions. And the number one vilification in the world is, of course, child porn. Now, as everyone knows, my stance on child porn is that I want to lay him down on the ground and hit him in the head with a mining pick. I absolutely hate child pornography. I think that pedophiles should be shot. That's my personal opinion there. And views expressed by me doesn't express anybody else except for my dog, because my dog thinks they should all be shot too. Don't you, Ranger? Anyway, in keeping with the trend of vilification, we now have a story about no warrants needed to search computers at work. Yes, it's an interesting sort of story here, and I can't remember where I dragged this out of. I think it was some American paper. But anyway, police do not need search warrants to examine an employee's computer for incriminating files, as a Washington State appeals court has ruled. All that is necessary is permission of the business that owns the computer, the appeals court said in a 3-0 decision last week. In April 2003, when Jack Leck, who's a piece of shit, briefly worked on a non-profit organization called World Peace Ambassadors, he allegedly used an office computer to do web searches for preteen boys and girls and participate in related mailing lists from his Hotmail account. Now, that's unbelievably, like, what a fuckstick. Anyway, when police showed up with some questions, the nonprofit group permitted the computer be seized without a warrant. Well, no duh. Leck, who was charged with 50 counts of possessing child pornography, was sentenced to 4 years in prison. He claimed the Washington State Patrol Crime Lab seizure and search of the computer without warrant was illegal because it violated his Fourth Amendment right to privacy. The appeals court disagreed, and the Washington State Supreme Court has authorized warrantless searches as long as the lawful owner of the property gives consent. Now, that's a big one there, giving consent. And it gives consent voluntarily. You can't stick a gun against his head and get consent, I guess. The court noted, Leck did not share equal authority with the nonprofit's director over the WPA office or computer. Thus, Leck's consent in the state search was not necessary. That was according to Judge Mary-Way Van Deren. The court upheld Leck's conviction and sentence. So guess what, pederast? You get to go to jail. Have a nice fucking time getting ass rammed. Now, This, of course, is this particular case is a good case, but this you can bank is going to be cited because now that's just an employer in a nonprofit organization. This is one of those should that have occurred? You bet. I think that's viable. I mean, if I'm an employer and my employees and I've got the computer and everything, and you want to search his stuff, if I'm the guy who physically owns the box, sure, that's fine. But you can see how this kind of an idea could get a little bit weird. What if I work at Home Depot and, you know, I've got files, blah, 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 people searching your stuff? It's a dodgy bit of territory. So, you know, not to give advice to, you know, people who are doing illegal things, but this is why encryption is a good thing. Yes, it is not your strong point in, you know, it's not undefeatable. I mean, anything is defeatable these days. But, I mean, you should at least take steps that if you think you might get yourself in some trouble, you should definitely be taking steps to secure your equipment. Because right now, obviously, you don't need to have any kind of search warrant to search the computer. And you can bank the corporations are going to let, you know, the government go in there. They're all working hand in hand. You know, Home Depot is going to let people in there, Coca-Cola, all these guys. And they're going to be citing this case as reasoning for that. Do I think this should have happened in this case? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, oh, wow, look at that. You're searching for preteen boys. You've got a whole bunch of 50 counts. I guess he's got quite the amount of information on there. You know, some people have argued, well, it's just pictures, you know. Well, you know, my whole take on that thing is that with child pornography is not art. Child pornography is documentation of a crime, okay, which is a huge difference between having anti-George Bush stuff or anti-political stuff or any kind of, you know, rhetorical dogma or whatever it is, even if you're a white supremacist. Okay, being a white supremacist is, you know, shitty and everything, but, I mean, you're allowed to have your own opinion. And if you do not believe in free speech for those you despise, then you do not believe in it at all, according to Noam Chomsky anyway. So, and the guy's a lot smarter than I am, so I'm going to go with what Noam says. However, in a case of child pornography, this is documentation of a crime, and in viewing this and supporting this, you, in fact, are supporting this crime and creating a desire for that. So hopefully that kind of clears up that whole idea. But still, is this a good rule? I don't know. I'm going to leave it for other people to argue and decide about that. I'm just going to report it to you and let you make your own decision. Now, here's an interesting one that, you know, I'm probably going to beat Slashdot on. Toyota's rolling out the droids. Toyota Motor Corp is planning to introduce multitasking, high-functioning industrial robots at its 12 domestic factories to cope with the labor shortage, a Japanese Economic Daily reported on Thursday. That would be tomorrow, even though I'm getting it today. I got this news about, it's pretty fresh. The Nihon Kenzai Shibam, now I'm getting this out of a Japanese paper, so I'm not too sure what that exactly means, said that Toyota hopes the new robots developed with Yakasawa Electric Corp will produce vehicles as efficiently or better than human workers, the report said, adding it currently uses 3,000 to 4,000 conventional industrial robots at its domestic factories. This is all according to Kyoto. Man, I got to learn some Japanese because I'm just murdering this language. But that's due to Kyoto News. Now, I'm guessing, of course, that we're going to be having more and more automation in the workplace. More and more factories are going to be getting automated. And, you know, how do we feel about that? Well, I think robotics are cool. I mean, definitely the future is due to robotics. But what's going to happen is that the more robotics become involved, naturally, the less labor is going to be needed. And therefore, you know, it does mean a lack of jobs. You can't get away from that. Robots are cool, but they do mean a lack of jobs. So do we go all Luddite here and, you know, just as, you know, you have the automated weaving, you know, we're going to start smashing the machines? No, we can't do that. We can't turn back the wheels of time. But in essence, even though these robots are taking away jobs, they're taking away low-paying, probably risky jobs, and they open up a market for robot repair people and maintenance. I mean, someone's got to program these things. Someone's got to build the robots. Someone's got to, you know, maintain them. So I don't think it's really all that evil. Again, I'm just reporting the news here. You can take your own take on it. I think it's cool. I like robots. I think the whole thing is kind of neat. Now, a while back on another show, some show that I was doing, I was talking about, you know, cameras. And a lot of people think, oh, Sean thinks cameras everywhere is a cool thing. Now, I just want to clarify something on this. I think the cameras everywhere are a cool thing, provided everyone has equal access to them. What I'm worried about is when the government has, you know, just only government-only access to cameras. That's, you know, where you've got the teleprompter in your house and everything. But if there's a public place, you know, if it's a public place, why not? Why not have a camera there? But check this out. Here's something that's just really bleeding edge, is that a lot of security cameras are wide open to the web. And these are the eyes of server, and you can get to them through Google. Thousands of security webcams, many supposedly are supposed to be private and confidential, are accessible via a simple Google search. That's according to Runet. Search engines expert Duncan Perry. I mean, how do you get that paperwork? I'm a search engine expert. Okay, creative director at a search consultancy firm Position Driver. Wow, you know, who comes up with these names? Explained that all that is needed to access these webcams is a well-crafted Google search. Google has added these pages to its index of web pages. Presumably, the search engine's crawler found them via links from other pages onto the camera page. Google is not at fault. The webmasters responsible for these pages should have placed them in a password-protected directory and indicated to Google and the other search engines that the directory should not be spidered using a robot's .txt file on its server. Now, if you go to my weblog, which is where you're going to find all the links and postings for everything, I'm not going to. It's on LiveJournal. Do a search for Sean Kennedy. You'll find me. I've actually got the link to the direct Google search, so you can start, you know, locking down webcams, so you can take a look around what's going on. I like the idea of people being able to go out and look at the world through these cameras. I think of them more as windows than I do as, you know, some sort of a security risk. If you think about it, there could be people who are watching the streets, you know, late at night. Somebody sees somebody getting mugged or something, and they do something about it. I think there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do with this. This is just technology. Technology itself is not evil. It's how that technology is utilized as to whether or not that technology is evil. The other part to this, of course, is if you have the tools and you have the talent, you got to have the nuts to use it. And that's what happened with, our wonderful friends over there in Thailand who decided that even though they had warnings of the massive tsunami, which is killing, like, what's it up to now? 200,000 people over there dead. Even though they had that warnings, nobody had the balls to call an alert on that. Well, guess what? Doing some searching, I found out that there's a storm alert that I'm going to call right now. So for those of you in the United States who want to get locked down, there's something pretty big coming down the pipe, and I'm not the only one saying so. Check it out. Here's a bit of a storm alert. Moisture-laden storms from the north, west, and south are likely to converge on much of America over the next several days in what could be a once-in-a-generation onslaught. Meteorologists forecast this yesterday. Now, that's a little wild. Now, at what point do you have to go, whoa, wait a minute, man, something really funky is going on with the weather? You look down all across the United States this year, man, nobody's making a big deal about the weather. Oh, da-da-da, everything's normal. Alaskan permafrost is melting, pipelines are cracking, houses are falling into the soil. Nobody's saying anything. Now we've got a once-in-a-generation onslaught. Nobody, again, saying a thing. If the gloomy computer models, okay, the computer models are not gloomy. It's just the computer models are accurate. I'm not trying to fearmonger here, okay? Knowledge is power. Information is key. So you need to know that if there's a chance you could get your ass snowed in somewhere or in a dark place, I'd like people to make sure that you got a good supply of wog food on the go, and they're not going to wind up getting, locked in a bad situation. A little bit of prior planning. You should have an emergency kit handy. You know, come on, we're all responsible adults, and if not, well, you're going to be pretty soon, so get with the program here. Especially if anyone else, if you're the only one in the house, chances are you don't live on your own. Very few people who have a chance to live on their own anymore because the cost of living is so unbelievably high. You're probably sharing your dwelling with, like, four, five, six other people. And you may be the only cyberpunk in the house. You might be the only person switched on, and everybody else is like, oh, I don't know why you got all this army kit. Okay, well, listen up. When no one loves a soldier till the enemy's at the gate. Now that is God's truth, and no one's gonna love a wog until the power goes out. So if you think that you might be in one of these zones, I highly recommend you make sure you get yourself some candles, some extra food, so you can lock down for 5-6 days in case something goes sideways. I'm not saying you should stockpile the closet and start loading guns. I'm just saying make sure that you and yours are gonna be safe and warm. That's all I'm saying here. Now check it out. The three storms, the gloomy computer models and the U.S. Climate Prediction Center are right, we'll see this terrible trio. The Pineapple Express, number one, a series of warm, wet storms heading east from Hawaii, drenching Southern California and the far southwest. Already beset with heavy rain and snow, flooding, avalanches, and mudslides are possible. So if you're in California, that's what's in the cards for you. An Arctic Express. A mass of cold air chugging down from Alaska and Canada. And right now I'm in Vancouver, and we got a cold snap happening out here in Vancouver that's pretty, pretty bad. It's not like on the prairies where it's like, minus 50 and stuff like that. It's down. It's unusually cold here. It's getting around minus 10 in that. People are going to start freaking out pretty soon. So, heads up on that. Bringing frigid air down from Alaska and Canada and potentially heavy snow and ice to the usually mild wintered Pacific Northwest. Okay, well, check that out. That's stuff you need to know about. Number three is an unnamed, okay, this is weird, an unnamed warm, moist storm system from the Gulf of Mexico, drenching the already saturated Ohio, Tennessee, and Mississippi valleys. Expect heavy river flooding and spring-like tornadoes. Oh boy, what happens when you mix all coasts? So we got two with rain, one with heavy winds, and now we got tornado and snow. So we're talking about what? The possibility of a massive blizzard? Yet the more Wallace, I guess he's the dude, Mike Wallace, the University of Washington's atmospheric scientist. This Mike Wallace guy studied the models. The more he became convinced that something wicked is coming. It fits together nicely. Nice adjective, dude. Nicely. It fits together probably terrifyingly, he said. There's going to be weather in the headlines this weekend for sure. So if you're within these regions, be alert. Stay alert, stay alive. You want to watch the weather here because it's coming down the pipe. I'm giving you warning, fair ball right now. If you want to slough this off and say whatever, Sean, you're a whack job. Maybe nothing will happen. Okay, hey, God willing, nothing will happen, man. Let's just not worry about that. Maybe you can get all sentinelese and be all ninja, and you can check with your arthritis in your ankles or whatever the hell it is, and you'll know that everything will be okay, and that's cool. But knowing this right now, I've got to get this information out because, in lieu of what happened on the weekend, That seems a little bit too good to just kind of sit on, you know. Don't sound the alarm, Weather Service meteorologist Johnny Bird said, but tell everyone just to pay attention to future forecasts. Don't sound the alarm, just pay attention to future forecasts. Well, I think that everyone is just a little bit too afraid of everyone else. You ever notice that when something like this comes down the pipe, I'm not worried that everyone is going to, like, you know, turn off the computer and begin screaming and running around their house. I don't think everyone's going to panic that much. We've got an education system here. We know what's going on. We know that there's a chance there's going to be some bad weather. So hunker down. You want to make sure you got enough supplies so that you're not raiding the shelves on Friday when the big, you know, blast comes down. Maybe swing out today, pick up some canned goods, whatever. Make sure you got enough, you know, tofu or whatever else you dine on so that you're not going to wind up getting caught with your pants down, because that sucks. The three storms are likely to meet in the nation's midsection and cause even more problems, sparing only areas east of the Appalachian Mountains. Property damage and a few deaths are likely, forecasters said. But hey, let's not listen to Johnny Berg. Don't tell anyone. Don't sound the alarm. Few deaths, you know, are that's likely, but let's not, you know, call any alarms out. You're talking two or three times a century this type of thing happens, said Prediction Center senior James Wagner, who's been forecasting storms since 1965. It's a pattern that has just a little bit of everything. Okay, guys, seriously, if you're in the central United States and you know this is coming down the pipe, you know, heads up, boys. You want to make sure that you don't get caught outside on this one, and you want to make sure you got enough supplies. On a personal note, I think it'd be very, very cool if you know, this news broadcast was able to help some people maybe make their stay over the weekend if they wanted to get snowed in or there was a lot of flooding damage. Maybe just the act of taking a few, you know, ounces of prevention versus a few tons of cure, maybe this might just help you out. So think about it a little bit. Heads up. You know, there might be some really bad weather coming. So, you know, take notice of that. Now, in the U.S. Army, a medic was ordered to take down his weblog. Now, this is like a journal or something like this, okay? Now, everyone knows what a blog is. I've got one. You've got one. Now, he's just writing, and he's letting other people read it. This is kind of a scary George Orwellian sort of story. A U.S. Army doctor. This isn't just anybody. It's a doctor, okay? Highly educated dude in Iraq has been ordered to shut down his internet diary or blog on claims that it contravened a breach of unspecified regulations. Well, in the Canadian Army, we got that too. Section 129, much conduct unbecoming. I mean, the Army military law, they can just make up, you know, laws whenever they want. They can just, you know, sneeze and decide that you're going to jail. Major Michael Cohen, a doctor in the 67th Combat Support Hospital Unit, chronicled life in a modern MASH unit, treating troops and wounded Iraqi insurgents alike. The 35-year-old was a chief emergency room doctor when the Mosul mess tent was bombed December 21st, and 22 people died. So this guy's like a vet, okay? He knows his crap. That and a year's worth of accounts were replaced with a short notice on his site, 67CSHDOCS. Okay, so 67 Crash Docs, I guess, 67CSHDOCS.com. The Philadelphia Inquirer was reporting this. Levels above me have ordered me to shut down this website. They cite the information contained in these pages violates several Army regulations, Cohen wrote, adding that he disagreed with the ban. Well, he's probably disagreed with a lot of things that has gone on because, you know, he's over in a really nasty part of the world trying to put children back together again after they've been playing with toys that, you know, blow up and kill people. Lieutenant Colonel Steve Boylan, a spokesman for the coalition forces in Iraq, said the Pentagon allows blogging so long as authors do not reveal operational details that could aid attackers, but was not specific why Cohen was ordered to go offline. Now, chances are that, I mean, nobody knows about the huge protests that have been, none of the protests, the war protests are making the news. There's a massive protest where a whole jimmy whack of coffins was draped with flags, these makeshift coffins, and they were put out on lawns and stuff like that. Nobody knows anything about this. There's massive anti-war protests going on, but none of this makes the media. Why is that? You know, shouldn't the media be reporting on this massive anti-war sentiment that's going on in the United States? Whether or not you agree with the war, don't you think there should be some coverage of this? Well, you know, I mean, these people, they don't like love it or leave it. Well, okay, that's fine. Love it or leave it. You know, you can take that mentality, but it doesn't change the fact that you're not getting the straight news. You're not you should be getting objective stuff. You shouldn't all just be hearing about, you know, it's all about the tsunami. Look, everybody's doing all they can. Let's not focus on that too much anymore. Give the money you can to help those people. Just don't give it to the Red Cross because they keep half of it. You know, make sure you go through some smaller, more reputable charities. But, you know, you need to focus on what's going on at home. We've got our own people dying overseas. You want to make sure that, you know, I can't see why a doctor would be told not to talk. Unless, of course, you know, they want to try to keep news of casualties and, you know, all that stuff. Keep that out of the news. You want to keep that down. That doesn't mean that they want to keep the casualties down. They just want to not have people talk about the casualties, which is bizarre because somehow not talking about it makes it goes away. No, that's not the case. You need to talk about these things. And talking about casualties, now everyone knows that Coca-Cola is bad for you, okay? If you don't know that Coca-Cola is bad for you, dude, it's like you're shooting up with sugar. It's the big white death. Everybody knows Coke is bad. Now, when you read the book No Logo, you'll learn that corporations are responsible for murder in the third world. Out here in the first world, you know, we don't really care. We get our Coke, we go to the corner store, we buy whatever, we make a few callous jokes at the expense of other people. Who gives a crap? But in India, the armed forces of Coca-Cola are a real threat, and people are dying. Their environment is being poisoned, and nobody seems to care. Yes, the armed forces of Coca-Cola have struck again. Over 1,000 community members adversely affected by Coca-Cola marched on the Coca-Cola factory premises in, good luck in me pronouncing this right, Medinganj. Jeez, I'm crappy with, you know, foreign country names and stuff like that. Medinganj, good luck. Near the holy city of Varanasi in India. Okay, so it's someplace in India near a holy city of Varanasi. Okay. You know, what do you want from me here, all right? I'm just a Canadian guy. Varanasi, eh? In India on November 24th, demanding that the factory be shut down. So there's like, you know, over a thousand people saying, we want this corporation out of here. The peaceful march was then savagely attacked by police. 350 people were jailed and around 100 people injured just by protesting a war? No. A government? No. A corporation. Or using the corporation's muscle in the police force, the corpolitical. The march in Medinganj, we'll just call it that, was at the end of a 10-day, 250-kilometer march from the Balia site of another Coca-Cola bottling facility to Medinganj, whatever, bringing to attention to Coca-Cola's negative impacts on communities across India. A 250-kilometer march protesting these guys. That is some heavy, heavy ruckin. I don't know if you've ever actually had to march at all, but 250 clicks is a long haul, especially in the heat of India. Communities living around Coca-Cola's bottling plants across India are facing severe water shortages. Yeah, because it's India and it's hot. And the groundwater and soil have been polluted directly as a result of Coca-Cola's bottling operations in that area. The Coca-Cola company has also illegally occupied land. What the hell? In the area. Furthermore, tests have confirmed that Coca-Cola's products in India, contain high levels of pesticides, including DDT, sometimes higher than 30 times those allowed by US and EU standards. So a can of Coke over there isn't the same thing as a can of Coke over here. I mean, a can of Coke over here is bad enough. Did you know that syrup, and now everyone knows we get syrup in those in Coca-Cola, right? You know, you get those syrups that you go into the fountain drinks and everything like that. But that syrup is actually not what it's shipped as. That is a less condensed form. There is a concentrated form of that Coca-Cola syrup which is shipped. And when it is shipped, it's not shipped in a Coca-Cola truck. It's shipped in biohazard containers because that's how potent this stuff is. Apparently, the raw syrup that Coca-Cola ships will burn through your arms and stuff. This is, like, really toxic crap. So never mind that. add to that mix, you've got, you know, DDT and pesticides and God knows what else. Coca-Cola was also distributing toxic waste from its plant to farmers in India, including the Melodangi, under the guise of fertilizer. Yeah, yeah, put this on your plants. It's good for them. Yeah, 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 no problem. Have a Coke and a smile. Yeah, and shut the fuck up. The march, with more than half women and youth, was festive, colorful, and peaceful. Now, I don't know if you know anything about India, but generally Indian people, like the people of India, are a very, very spiritual people. These are not violent, vicious people, okay? So when they do things, it's a very it's not like you know, when you look at the G8 summits and the WTO protests and stuff like that, those are what we call a peaceful demonstration. When you look at their demonstrations, they look more like parades, okay? Marchers were met at the bottling facility by armed police with guns, riot gear, and batons. The batons they use are these things called lathi sticks. They're really, really nasty, do a lot of damage. Speaker after speaker denounced Coca-Cola's illegal practices in the area and nationally, and spoke of the immense damage being inflicted on the communities as a result of water shortages, because you know, you need water to survive, pollution, and loss of land. Particularly impacted are the farmers of the area and all across India. Well, yeah, you got no water. That's a direct lack of food. But hey, you know, 79 cents later, you can buy yourself a Coke and rot out your teeth, gums, and rob all the calcium from your bones. Towards the ends of the rally, the marchers decided to march to the factory gates. Ooh, bad move. About 100 meters from the site of the rally. So that's it. They're 100 meters from the gates. No problem. The armed police reacted violently and swiftly with no warning. The armed police launched a vicious lathi, those are the baton sticks there, charge on the marchers. Many women, in particular, became the target of male police officers who beat them incessantly. Now, I don't know about you, but that seems a little excessive to me. The police also chased after community members in the surrounding fields to beat them. So run, we're going to chase you through the fields and beat you. Many of whom were escaping the site of the violent police action. So, the police have gone, you know, completely, you know, shithawk. Let's run. No, we're going to chase you and beat you for daring to raise a fist against the mighty blows of Coca-Cola. A Buddhist monk. Gotta watch those Buddhist monks, you know, they're real badass. A Buddhist monk was also attacked by police, who wasn't even involved with the whole thing. He showed no regard whatsoever for anyone present in the area. He was just kind of hanging out in India. You know, lots of monks in India, he's just hanging out, and the police are like, whatever, you're bald, you go down too. Whack! The police attacks were ordered by a Mr. Tahir Iqbal, I-Q-B-A-L, Tahir Iqbal, ADM, in Varanasi. Coca-Cola is stealing our water, our land, and getting away with it illegally. And they are calling our struggle for our livelihoods, our existence, illegal. This is according to Nandlal. Jeez, I'm crappy with these Indian names. Nandlal Master. Mr. Master. Sure, Mr. Master said, you know, they say that, you know, we're a corporation. We come in here. We're going to take all your water, food, destroy your farming, poison the ground, give you toxic waste to sprinkle on your crops. And if you fight us, it's illegal. No, not so cool. And this Mr. Master guy is one of the organizers from the Lok Samati and National Alliance of People's Movements. We do not accept this, and our struggle will prevail, continued Master. Well, you know, those people got real guts. Over here in the first world, you know, a guy like me, I'm broadcasting through the web, but when I hear about guys like this, man, I mean, hats off to these people, because it's a real war for them. The violent suppression of the march and rally in Melodangi is, I wish I could figure out how to pronounce that, is not new. Protesters were violently attacked in September 2003 by armed police. Other struggles against Coca-Cola in India are increasingly met with more violent suppression. And this isn't going to stop there. No. You can bank this is going to keep going. You can bank that the core politicals are going to start flexing more muscle, because it's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. We want to watch this, because what happens over there echoes back over here. We know this. We know this. You got to watch the way we treat. It's one world, man. It's a round ball. And that shit's going to roll right back on us if we're not careful. You think they're going to draw a distinction between Coca-Cola and America? Think about it. How American is Coca-Cola? Santa Claus is a creation of Coca-Cola. Yes, there's St. Nicholas or whatever, but you ever wonder why you never see Santa Claus drinking a Pepsi? The reason why is because Coca-Cola, the red and white, that whole thing, he wears Coke's colors. The Santa Claus, as we understand him, the guy with the white beard, red suit, you know, all that stuff, he's always drinking a Coke, because that concept of Santa Claus is created by Coca-Cola. The guy in the mall who you sit your kid on the lap. Now, Father Christmas with all the robes. It looks like, you know, Ghost of Christmas Past. That's not the Coca-Cola generation. He's the guy, the Coca-Cola Santa Claus, the guy with the black boots, red suit, black belt, you know, the white beard and all that, wearing the Coke colors. That's the Santa Claus that Coca-Cola created. And their mind share has infected our culture so deep that we can't even, we don't even know that. I mean, Coca-Cola, to say you don't like Coca-Cola is like, oh, wow, that's kind of un-American. You know, America, Coca-Cola, Levi's jeans, and Hershey bars, right? All of those things are toxic. All of those things are the result of child labor. So who's to say that when to hate Coca-Cola doesn't mean you hate America. It just means that you hate people who poison other people and unhealthy food. Speaking of unhealthy food, don't eat the food. This is a scary, scary story. U.S. federal oversight of crops genetically engineered to produce medications in their seeds and leaves is inadequate to prevent unwanted contamination of food crops, according to analysis released yesterday by a scientific advocacy group. As a result, the report concludes, American consumers are at risk of inadvertently dosing themselves with prescription drugs while eating a morning bowl of cereal. Gah, there's a scary concept. Now you don't even have to take your Prozac anymore. We'll get it on our cornflakes. The report, which biotech executives and regulators denounce as overwrought, is the latest to look at the small but rapidly growing pharma sector of agriculture, in which corn, soybeans, you're no longer safe, and other plants are being designed to produce high-tech drugs or industrial compounds in their tissues. Gah! Pardon me while I plant a garden. The approach has many advantages over traditional systems for manufacturing those products, including potential cost savings. Save some money, dose the kids, the report concludes. But it also raises the specter of accidental contamination of the food supply with blood thinners, hormones, or any of the scores of biologically active compounds that are being made experimentally in plants. Hormones. Now, speaking of hormones, I'd like to know what's going on with the young women today, okay? Without sounding like a completely raging pervert, young girls today have got huge tits. I don't know what's going on, but they do. When I was in school, chicks didn't look like that. But, we make jokes about it. We call them prostitutes. We call them everything. You know, and they're dressing like they're God knows what. But the thing isn't there something going on with the food? Because kids are starting to mature more and more early. As a matter of fact, women are starting to go into puberty at a younger and younger ages. Why is that? Why is nobody talking about that? You know, that this is something that's very, very serious. This is affecting our children and therefore all of us. Because the next generation, these little kids are going to grow up to be big kids, and then that's going to be a real problem. God knows where that's going to go. No one, not consumers, not food companies, not biotech companies, wants to discover drugs in our cornflakes, said Margaret Mellon of the Union of Concerned Scientists, a group long critical of the federal regulatory scheme of agriculture and biotechnology. Now, there's the other side of the coin on this. Okay, people who, you know, there's the Frankenfood people who just scream and cry, and, oh, genetically modified food is evil. No. There are people out there who've saved, you know, millions and millions of lives by feeding people. Starvation is very, very common. And I'm not one to bitch with my mouth full. Don't get me wrong here. But I really want to make sure that we don't start having drugs distributed or created inside of plants that could get out of control. We could wind up with a green goo syndrome that could really suck here. Okay, you want to make sure you keep track of that. Genetic engineering on any level is some scary stuff. Now, granted, I don't want to be a fearmonger here. I don't know enough about the whole thing to really just stand up and say, nope, that's it. No more GMO for me. Well, I try to eat as natural as I can. I try to make sure that you get food that says it's organic by the not, you know, raised organic or nature's path, you know, because there's a lot of these companies that try to come up with stuff that's not organic, but it sounds like it's organic. It's nature's way. It's born free and all this other bullshit. They try to make it sound like they, you know, they package it up with smiling chickens and pictures of, you know, long expanses of the wilderness and crap like that. Don't buy it, okay? Unless it says certified organic by the California organic laws, which incidentally, they're real, you know, Nazis about that. If they get that certification, you can bank it's probably pretty good. unless it has that certification, I would not trust it. You know, if you're going to go organic, that would be the way to go. Or, of course, you can just, you know, go all the way out. And if you happen to have a little chunk of dirt, sure, why not try some gardening? There's actually some interesting articles you can get on, if you do some research on the web, on biointensive gardening. Very, very interesting stuff where you can actually, you know, raise, like, potatoes and crap like that using car tires and stacking them up. And you can grow, like, a whole bunch of food. And it's kind of fun, you know. It's not like you're knitting anything. I mean, you just kind of throw some seeds in the ground, chuck some water on it once in a while, and it grows. You know, and a couple weeks later, you're eating, whatever. It's kind of cool. Now, something that's not kind of cool is the whole border fingerprinting of we Canucks here. Now, we've been on the border with the United States. I'm sure that no American would ever think the Canadians are a problem. Really, I mean, you have enough prisons down there to make being a Canadian illegal, and you could throw us in jail. But now they're starting, the fingerprinting has already started for people going to the States. You can bank that I'm probably going to get just photographed, screwed, glued, and tattooed when I go down there. But foreign visitors at the 50 busiest land borders in 10 states linked to Canada and Mexico are now being fingerprinted as part of the government's new biometric screening system, the Homeland Security Department announced on Monday. Now, there's some frightening stuff. The program is in effect at our four Michigan-Ontario border crossings, the Ambassador Bridge and Detroit-Windsor Tunnel in Detroit, the Blue Water Bridge in Port Huron, and the International Bridge in Sault Ste. Marie. The system, which has been really friendly named the U.S. Visit, come visit us and we'll, you know, how about that? How about you come to my house and I'll just, oh, hey, good to see you. Why don't I just fingerprint you, take a few photographs here. Stand over there. We got to draw some blood. Yeah, that's a little frightening. The system called U.S. Visit scans photographs of the visitor's face and index fingers into a computer, which are matched with federal agency's criminal database. Wow. Excuse me while that scares the snot out of me, because I could cross, they decide that I want it for questioning, and poof tech, Mr. Kennedy disappears forever. Homeland Security Undersecretary Asa Hutchison told reporters that U.S. officials have arrested or denied admission to 372 criminals or immigration violators since the system began last year at 15 seaports and 115 airports. About 17 million people have been enrolled in this system, therefore the database. Because of the U.S. Visit biometric technology, the United States is safer, said Hutchison. Oh, yeah, safer from who? It's not going to protect us from, you know, the real problem, which, of course, is the government, the CIA, and all the black box system that's going on. But anyway, noting that the system was in place 2 days before the end of year deadline. Wow, I got it in there ahead of schedule by 48 hours. Well, good for you, Hutchison, you fucking nut. Although no known terrorists have been caught by U.S. Visit. Oh, Hutchison said it's possible. Hutchison said it's possible that it kept out some traveling on a forged passport who meant to do harm. That's possible. You know, that's possible. It's also possible that it could have stopped aliens, the Predator, and Batman from coming into the country. As a matter of fact, it's possible that this system turned back thralling hordes of Al-Qaeda terrorists. Matter of fact, it stopped Nazis. It's possible it could have stopped the Nazis. It could have stopped, you know, giant toads from leaping on this head. That could have stopped that. That could have. You know, dude, come on. Don't give me that. And yes, by the way, Evil Soul Trance, I do read everything. I'm everywhere on the web. I don't even think that anything passes my, you know, squirrely little bits of vision. Anyway, now, on to this is the subject of vaccination. Now, I myself have never been vaccinated, okay? And the flu shot and all this kind of stuff, I'm pretty leery about that. I don't know a lot about it, and if you've got some kind of weird immune disease or something like that, you want to think about this and definitely do some research on your own. I'm not trying to, you know, backpedal with your standards, you know, make sure you consult your doctor, but if you do have like a naturopath or, you know, a doctor who you trust, which believe you me, there are few and far between doctors you can actually trust, but if you got a doctor you can trust, yeah, okay, you know, talk to him, see what's going on, but there's some freaky stuff going on with vaccinations for kids these days. Check this out. This is an article from PR Web from October 12, 2004. Thousands of children are now mentally handicapped from their vaccines that contain this substance called thimerosal. Jeez, I hate these names. T-H-I-M-E-R NOSAL, a neurotoxic mercury compound, so a brain poison made out of mercury. This has affected children in the U.S. and into the numbers of hundreds of thousands. These children will require care and rehabilitation services for the rest of their lives. Now, you can bet that's also on a sliding scale, okay? You've got kids that are directly affected, and it's obvious. And then you've got other kids who just aren't so affected. Maybe that's part of where this ADHD comes from. That is, of course, if you don't take into account that no one has time to spend with their children anymore. They fill them full of sugar, totally feed them a complete lack of nutrition, put them in front of a cathode ray nipple, and then force feed them, you know, programming. Of course, the kid's going to get a little antsy when he goes to school. You know, that's really where this ADHD... And by the way, where the hell did ADHD come from? That wasn't around 20 years ago. Oh, yes, it was. We just didn't call it that. Okay, dude, no. Sorry, not washing. Okay, what's happening here is that parents don't have enough time to spend with their children. Children aren't getting enough exercise. Children aren't allowed to be children anymore. And that's where a lot of this is coming from. And now we find out that we got mercury poison causing brain damage in our kids due to vaccinations. What the hell? The cost of society will be billions of U.S. dollars. The political system that allowed this atrocity to happen has been put on notice with no credible responses and in no way to explain what actually happened, other than the painful truth of this unfortunate matter. Well, unfortunate, I'd call this like a monster tragedy, okay? If I found out that my kid was brain damaged from a serum, whoa, like, gun store! I'm serious, man, that's a little bit crazy. There's a book titled Mercury, The Winged Messenger, which has helped bring this tragedy to light with glaring reality that cannot be disputed. So that's a book to add to the list there. It's a book called Mercury, The Winged Messenger. Maybe check that out. Be objective, might be bullshit, make sure you check your facts. The general public sees the conflict of interest connection between the U.S. government and pharmaceutical industry. Well, no tie over there. That's why NutraSweet, the very substance that turns your brain into sponge, is still okayed. This tragedy will eventually be brought out in the courts, but you can bank that the only person going to be talking about this will be me. The legal system that protected the drug giants with a three-year statute of limitations vaccine injury court law has also been put on notice. Thousands of parents have acted and are starting to make a big difference in the United States. Wow. The state of Iowa and California have now banned, but that's it. Only those two have banned thimerosal in children's vaccines. This is an important step in the fight for justice. Well, I'd say it's an important step in making sure that your kids don't wind up being, you know, brain damaged. So if you don't live in Iowa or California, you might want to ask about that and make sure that you know exactly what's going into the syringe that's going into your kid. Now, another thing, people who are trying to track you, you ever notice how technology is starting to be used against us? Well, now it seems that employers are using GPSs to track employees. Ciro Viento commands a platoon of 110 garbage trucks, so that when a caller complained after seeing one of the blue and white trash tanks speeding down Route 22, Viento didn't know which driver to blame until he checked his computer. Within a few taps on the keymore, Viento zeroed in on the driver, one particular front loader, which the screen showed had been on the very road at 722, doing 51 miles per hour in a zone restricted for 35. Gotcha, you're fired! Of course, that's going to be just, you know, a perfect technology to, you know, make our lives just a little bit worse. This is a quote from the boss here. If you're not out there babysitting them, you don't know how long it takes to do a route. The guy could be driving around the world. He could be at his girlfriend's house. Yeah, absolutely. Let's have a little bit of trust here. And Viento of Automated Waste Disposal Incorporated. Well, it's not that automated. Of course, it's now it should be called like maybe Micromanaged Waste Disposal. A commercial and household trash hauler doing business in Western Connecticut and neighboring New York counties. Now there's literally no place for them to hide. Now, there's literally no place for them to hide. Sounds like the kind of guy who pulls the wings off and flies, you know what I mean? Had an update, a wonderful, wonderful piece of media you can check out, thanks to Dark Nature. You want to go check out www.votergate, VOTERGATE.TV. Okay, you'll need to have a download, I think it's QuickTime, but hey, you know, there's, you know, sometimes you have to install crappy software to watch the media. It's not my fault. I didn't make it. Okay, whatever. If Simina made it, you know you'd been able to watch it. You'd be in DivX. But whatever. Dark Nature pointed this, and it talks a lot about that black box voting. Let's get some more data on that. After all, we're talking about the leadership of the free world. And you'll notice that in the next few weeks, this is going to start bubbling to the surface more and more. And if we can all just keep our heads together a little bit longer, maybe we might be able to find out just really what's going on. That's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. And this is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of Adam, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, the other Peter, Michael, Timor, Aaron, Greg, SB, Richard, WebLife, Matt, Azure Network, Evan, Drake, Brian, Ashton, David, Austin, Jonathan, Adam, Jonathan, Trevor, Jonathan, Trevor, Mark, Art, Matthew, Kyle, Justin, and Matthew Jameson. Very, very cool. If you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca, ask Sim, and he'll tell you what you need to do. I'd like to give a special shout out to the special reporters Transix, Sylvanus, DK. D. Krupp ICZ. Now, I don't know how you pronounce that, but whatever. I'm going to go with D. Krupp ICZ. Iridium, Jijin Machina, Manual, Dark Nature, Mega Progman, Gothic Serpent. It's actually X, Gothic Serpent X, but I don't know if that's Gothic Serpent X or what. And Stone Rido for their assistance. And in gathering data and making sure that I stay on track, trying to bring you the best news I can. And if you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you pick up Converting Vegetarians by Infected Mushroom. This is from one of Sim's collections he left at my house, believe it or not. It's actually called Converting Vegetarians, and the band's called Infected Mushroom. Very, very cool, and I've got the disc. I'm going to leave you now with Noam Chomsky beating up W's dad. Until then, that's what server said. End of line.
This conflict started August 2nd, when the dictator of Iraq invaded a small and helpless neighbor.
The crime has nothing to do with invasions, pretty much duplicating what the U.S. had just done a couple of months before in Panama.
Kuwait, a member of the Arab League and a member of the United Nations, was crushed. Its people brutalized. 5 months ago, Saddam Hussein started this cruel war against Kuwait.
He certainly is a brutal tyrant and a mass murderer, just as he was when the U.S. was openly supporting him. But the overwhelming majority of his crimes were committed during this period when he was a friend and ally.
While the world waited, Saddam Hussein systematically raped, pillaged, and plundered a tiny nation. No threat to his own.
At the time of the Halabja atrocities and later atrocities against the Kurds, the atrocities were being carried out with the support of George Bush and Margaret Thatcher.
He subjected the people of Kuwait to unspeakable atrocities. And among those maimed and murdered, innocent children.
The attack on the Kurds in northern Iraq destroyed large agricultural areas, as well as killing plenty of people, probably tens of thousands. That gave Bush an opportunity to do a favor for big U.S. agribusiness. We have to send extensive credits to Saddam Hussein so he can purchase agribusiness exports that after they had wiped out agricultural areas in Iraq along with gassing Kurdish citizens.
Arab leaders sought what became known as an Arab solution, only to conclude that Saddam Hussein was unwilling to leave Kuwait. Others traveled to Baghdad in a variety of efforts to restore peace and justice.
So concerned to evade diplomatic efforts, and they did, was, as they said, you know, the Chief of Staff Powell in internal discussion said, the problem is that Saddam may withdraw, leaving a puppet regime in place, at which point everyone in the Arab world will be happy. That's what they expected and they wanted to prevent.
Now, we have no choice but to drive Saddam from Kuwait by force. We will not fail.
The rebelling Iraqi generals requested from the United States, from General Schwarzkopf, they wanted to obtain, they didn't want help, but they wanted access to captured Iraqi arms that they could use in their effort to overthrow the tyrant and carry out a popular revolution. That was refused. They were not permitted access to arms. Saddam Hussein was authorized to use military gunships to attack the rebels.
As I report to you, air attacks are underway against military targets in Iraq. Our operations are designed to best protect the lives of all the coalition forces by targeting Saddam's vast military arsenal.
The bombers destroyed dams, water supply stations, sewage stations, pumping stations, electrical system. All of that amounts to biological warfare. You can simply ask yourself what would happen if something comparable was done, say, in Boston. People would be dying like flies from disease and starvation and so on. That's biological warfare with exactly the catastrophic effect that they predicted.
Iraq will eventually comply with all relevant United Nations resolutions, and then, when peace is restored, it is our hope that Iraq will live as a peaceful and cooperative member of the family of nations, thus enhancing the security and stability of the Gulf.
The rebellion was crushed. Basra was devastated, so were other areas. And the Bush administration was pretty frank about the reasons. Remember, this is March 1991, after the so-called war. They simply preferred what they called an iron-fisted Iraqi junta to the threat of a popular revolution, and therefore had to, in the name of what's called stability, had to support these major atrocities in which very possibly as many or more civilians were killed during the bombing the month earlier.